Josh Lowe, who's a political reporter for Newsweek and co-host of the weekly Newsweek Foreign Service podcast, joins me on Radio City Talk this afternoon to talk about some drama that unfolded just as we finished last evening's show. Michael T. Flynn, the National Security Advisor, he resigned last night after it was revealed that he had misled Vice President Pence over what he had said and the conversations he has had with the Russian ambassador to the United States. First of all, Josh, very welcome back to Radio City Talk. You haven't had too many quiet days, I suspect, over the last 4 to 6 weeks.
No, not at all. It's been a kind of constant deluge of scandals and controversies ever since Donald Trump took office, which I guess is kind of what anyone would have expected, given that he had so many combative positions on so many policy issues. But now what you're starting to get, as this is one example of, is as well as these kind of very bold, controversial policy moves, which are getting a lot of criticism in themselves, you're also starting to see key appointments that he's made starting to fall apart. A lot of the appointments process was quite rushed. They didn't have too many people to choose from, and the kind of fruits of that are beginning to be borne out now, and we're seeing that with Michael Flynn's resignation.
So explain to me exactly what happened with Michael Flynn. Now, he was in the job for less than a month. He said he gave incomplete information regarding a telephone call he had with the ambassador in late December, in and around the same time that President Trump was having his inauguration. Why has this angered the president so much, and it's starting to show potentially that he and the personality specifically of Michael T. Flynn weren't really akin to leadership in America?
Well, it was to do with the fact that Flynn had denied that he'd had specific conversation, firstly with extensive conversations with the Russian ambassador Sergei Kislyak, and also that he'd had any conversations with him about the potential lifting of sanctions on Russia. It's now emerged that he'd had substantially more contact with them than he'd said. He says that was inadvertent, but he admits that it was misleading. And so as a result, he says, well, you know, I misled the president and the vice president, even though he claims he didn't mean to, and so he's got to go. So firstly, of course, you know, this raises questions about an administration that will appoint someone who will mislead them, whether it be inadvertent or not. And also, of course, there's the interesting question of how this story emerged, and how also another story that came out in the New York Times today about FBI investigations into Trump's associates and their potential contacts with Russia, how these stories are starting to emerge. They are coming out from kind of intelligence officials speaking to the media. It raises the question of, is there now kind of more or less open warfare between the White House and the intelligence services, which obviously has all kinds of potentially negative impacts.
So this, it's a little bit contradictory compared to what some would lead us to believe about Donald Trump and some of the comments he made specifically in the last couple of weeks about potentially there's as many criminals in America as there is in Russia, etc., etc., etc. I think the word killers was used as well. So he preempts this relationship that he seems he wants with Russia. If that is the case, then why is this so serious with Flynn's contact with Sergei Kislyak? Why would he not encourage this, and why would this cause scandal? Is it the timing of it?
Well, the interesting thing is that Trump himself appears to, or reportedly, was not enormously bothered about the extent of Flynn's contact with Russian officials. That the White House may well have known about this for a few weeks before, that it was only as Flynn began to lose the confidence of some members of the defense staff and others, that and as the press, of course, started to get hold of it, that it descended into a scandal. So we don't actually know whether Trump himself personally is that bothered about this extent of contact with Russia. And of course, that is why any kind of links between Trump and those close to him and the Russian administration need to be scrutinized, because we know, as you've said, that Trump has taken a significantly less negative, less combative line on Russian President Vladimir Putin as his predecessors did. And the question has to be, you know, why? Is that something that is motivated purely by a desire for everyone to get along, or is that motivated by some sort of influence on the part of the Russians?
You're listening to Radio City Talk. I'm Connor Phillips. You're listening to Full Time, joined by Josh Lowe, political reporter for Newsweek and co-host of the weekly Newsweek Foreign Service podcast. Josh, a very broad question for you. Forgive me for that, but could this have gone any worse. This first 5, 6, 7 weeks that Donald Trump has been in the White House, could it have gone any worse?
It's a very interesting question. I mean, I think certainly it couldn't have been much more chaotic. You know, there have been scandal after scandal, both in terms of actual real-world impact, things like the controversial travel ban and the freeze on the refugee program, which caused worldwide chaos and is now causing domestic chaos with a battle in the courts, ranging right through to all sorts of personal stories about people like White House spokesman Sean Spicer. Is he going to stay? Is he not? In terms of chaotic press coverage, it couldn't have been more of a kind of bumpy first few weeks. The issue, of course, that we don't know yet is the extent to which this is kind of registering with the sort of people who voted for Trump, many of whom will not be following the minutiae of Washington news, many of whom will not necessarily even be appalled by things like America pulling out of its obligations to refugees and others. So we know that Trump is unpopular. We know that kind of the public thinks that he may not be doing too good a job, or some sections of the public think that. But what we don't know is whether those sections of the public that put him in the White House are particularly bothered yet, or even how much of this they're registering.
And you use the term press coverage there, and you cannot get away from that term, press coverage, media coverage, and of course fake news as well. It's become more and more prevalent. What we believe is fake news as well. And indeed, the essence of the phrase fake news in itself sometimes actually leads us to thinking that true news is fake and vice versa. How much of an impact could this have on the supporters that you mentioned there now? Those who have supported him, those who have been very overt to say, look, this is our man. Because Trump's very good at saying, no, I didn't do that. Oh, no, I didn't do that. That wasn't me. Now, sort of mainstream media, when we read publications like your own, we suspect we're getting the facts. But then when you have Facebook and you have Twitter and you have those people who believe anything he says, how powerful has it been?
Well, this is the thing. Yeah, when you have anonymous briefings from unnamed sources reported in the media, now often as a journalist you can't avoid that, especially if you're reporting national security, but it does mean that if people are reading this and are not quite sure sort of whether they trust the media in general, they don't know how to verify that, they think, should I trust them or should I trust Trump? So we don't quite know how that will come out. The other thing, of course, is that during the campaign, some of Trump's most vocal critics on issues like Russia were from Republicans who opposed him, people like Paul Ryan and Marco Rubio and others. Now, those critics have been slightly less vocal in the weeks since he's been elected. And so what were perhaps quite powerful, forthright voices which could reach some sections of the public that maybe the kind of more liberal media can't, they are being slightly more quiet. And so
do you think they're waiting on the big slip-up, though?
I mean, the question has to be raised, though, what slip-up would be big enough? You know, there have been plenty of them. I think that they are probably waiting a little while to kind of see how everything pans out, see how unpopular he is, and then, yes, perhaps wait for something truly kind of catastrophic. But the fact that they have been a bit quieter means that this, some of these stories have been maybe less damaging than they could have been.
A lot of damaging stories coming out. It's a really stressful time when you look at it. But, you know, one of the positives we can take out of it, and I place my tongue firmly in my cheek here, is the fact that if Melissa McCarthy keeps doing Sean Spicer, it will at least temporarily make me feel a little bit better about what's happening in the White House. It's been brilliant. And Saturday Night Live, I think, have been very good at it as well. But listen, Josh Lowe, the political reporter for Newsweek and co-host of the weekly Newsweek Foreign Service podcast. I've never asked this question to a political reporter on the show before. I normally ask this to sports people who can tell me what's coming next with the team. But have you got your eye open to what could be down the line and the next big controversy?
Well, I think with Trump, I guess it'll be, remember that rumbling away in the background is that Supreme Court battle that I mentioned before, which was coming up on his executive order to do with immigration. That will be a true moment where we kind of see the extent to which American civic institutions have power to stop the president doing exactly what he wants to do. And that's going to be a real groundbreaking, crucial moment to watch for.